If you enjoy this podcast, then subscribe to catch all future episodes.
Ferdinand, how are you?
I'm all right, Rob. How are you, mate?
I'm all right. I tell you what, your backdrop is a lot better than mine, I've got to say.
Well, I don't know. I love a radiator.
Do you know what? I was like, we've just moved back from the Middle East and we're in a small rented house.
Whereabouts?
I was based in Dubai, but I was all over the place.
Yeah.
But we moved back to this sort of small rented house with our huge family. And of course, you can't find, there's nothing. I'm not going to do it. But if I turned around my phone now, it's just boxes. And so hence
I lived like that. I mean, we moved in about 2 years ago and there's still the odd box here. I've also just spotted that there's a pair of jeans drying on the radiator. Yeah. So I'm going to get
that. Do you know what? You see, you've done me because I had...
There we go. No more laundry on the radiator.
That's what I had. On the back, on the radiator, her shin pads from yesterday.
Shin pads, lovely.
Which is my first question.
Yeah.
How are Aston Villa at the moment?
Oh God, don't start me talking about Villa. I will bore the clothes off you with my chat of Villa. Yeah, I mean it's not the first time in about 15 years that I've enjoyed watching Villa, but it's the first consistent time that I have. Yeah, I mean, it's fantastic. I felt absolutely over the moon that we're still here to start with, still in the league. I mean, we're incredibly lucky, but I think we did earn that luck at the tail end of last season. But then the start of this, I mean, look, obviously there's some freak results. You're a Liverpool fan, right?
I am, yeah.
Yeah, so that was freak of freak results. No one's denying that apart from absolute morons. But within it, that was the first time I'd properly seen us play Smith ball. You know, like the Premier League version of what he played at Brentford, which is why we went and got him, I think.
Because I guess like you, there was loads of people texting. You know, I mean, I was just, my phone nearly exploded when it was like, you know, when it got to five. I actually said halfway through the first half, I said this to my brother. I texted him and said, this could be 10.
Yeah, it was absolutely crazy.
Or they're going to come back now. Well, I was thinking they're not.
It was crazy. It was a funny day because it was without wanting to sort of darken the tone too much. We that day we lost my uncle, who was a massive lifelong Villa fan and like my family linked to Villa. So we on the one hand I was, you know, it's just so sad that he wasn't there to see it.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, we all sort of agreed in my little Villa WhatsApp group. We were like, right, Tim caused that one. on his way off this planet, he just chucked a few extra goals down for us.
Incredible.
It was a crazy day. And what I mean by the sort of Smith ball, the sort of seeing Dean Smith approach in that game is it felt like suddenly there was danger everywhere on the pitch for the first time in, you know, we've spent years with the only chance there's been any real threat from Villa is if you get Grealish on the ball. And now suddenly people are having to worry about marking three or four people that are in and around his ability. And it's exciting and scary. And, you know, it's basically down to us and Saints who's going to win the league now.
It is, without
without question.
The Saints on. Stop the count now.
Yeah, exactly. Stop the count. That's how democracy works. Is how football works.
Listen, before we stop on Villa, I've got a couple for you. One, Dean Smith. I've never met Dean Smith, bizarrely, but one, he seems one really, really nice, decent bloke.
Seems like just a kind man, doesn't he?
Really good. I mean, it was so sad with his father's passing and all. You know, he was under all that incredible pressure. But Ross Barkley must be, I don't know, the signing of the season. There was the thing in the papers.
Absolutely.
I never got a mention. I'm thinking, this is genius, by the way.
I know. I mean, the joke with Ross Barkley has always been, you know, he just loves running in straight lines. That's, you know, his flaw. But it suits his game the way he's playing with us because it's sort of that interchangeable front four or five that Dean likes to put together where, you know, he can drift left, Watkins can drift right, anyone can. I think Ross Barkley's fantastic and he must be, and it's one of those signings that they can go one of two ways, can't they? You know, it can be the kind of move that could actually damage your career as it did with who else am I thinking? Who did we have on loan from Chelsea last year?
I was about to say, how many people from Aston Villa could you say they go there and damage their career, which you could say in the last 5 years?
Totally, because it's a big club that people go for a paycheck or go to just like give it a bash at a mid-table team, and then if they don't, you know, whatever, they're still making a nice wage. But he's the other way, and obviously I think Dean has something where he sees a desire in a player to keep improving, and he's come in, and I think he could easily find himself back in the England squad.
Yeah, well, you'd think. I mean, because we'd be on all day, but there's definitely him and Grealish. I don't know what training's like, where they need two.
Well, they're pals, I think, aren't they?
They look, they're just on the same. I mean, it looks to me as he's given Grealish a new lease of life.
Totally. Because again, it takes the pressure off him. It means that, you know, he's looking for a player around him who's as good as him.
Yeah. Okay. Brilliant. Tell us.
I should
about...
say also, I make my dog wear a Villa collar on match days. It's very embarrassing for him, but he's accepted that it's as important as getting a walk and eating his food. It's wearing his Villa collar.
Please tell me the dog is called Gary Shaw or something like that.
Well, like, you know, Grealish was on the list. He's called Gilbert.
Brilliant. My son's just got a dog. Well, it was his girlfriend's who's got the dog, but it's his dog. It's a little dachshund, and it's called Stevie.
Oh, really? Stevie G?
After Stevie. Stevie. Anyway, tell us about Mank.
What do you want to know about Mank?
I want to know how you got involved in it. It's absolutely fantastic. I can't wait. The only thing I'm a bit disappointed about is I haven't seen it before I chat to you about it. But
there's plenty to look forward to.
You must have a good agent. That's all I'm saying.
I've got a fantastic agent. I've got an amazing agent. This one came through. You know, funnily enough, actually, in England at the time that I got the job, I didn't have an agent in England at the time.
Right.
I had very lovingly parted ways with my old agent because they were going on a year-long sabbatical and it was all, you know, sort of up in the air. And I was, just as every actor likes to talk about themselves being between jobs, I was between representatives. I've got a lovely agent here now, but I did at the time only have an agent in the States who is fantastic, called Stephen Hirsch. And he... I would love to tell the story that they said, how do you feel about maybe working on David Fincher's new film? And I was like, oh, I don't know. Let me think about it. I don't have anywhere near that clout. I was sent by him an email saying, this one looks really cool. You know, do you want to do a tape for it? And I was like, obviously, yes. But I mean, I'm not going to get it because it's, you know, it's a dream gig. But I might as well give it a bash. And then I can say that I've acted for David Fincher. And so I did a tape in this room, just there.
Brilliant.
It was the heat wave of last summer, and I was very sweaty. And then I went to a music festival and got a phone call saying Fincher really liked it. He's emailing you 16 pages of script.
Brilliant.
Now. Can you do it again and just do the rest of rest of these scenes? So I didn't drink very much that night and cancelled my sort of end of festival plans and came home and started sort of frantically researching the character, which is great fun. Did it, and then he asked me to install an app called Zoom. Who knows what that is? We'll never know.
Yeah.
But I keep saying I wish I'd bought shares in Zoom at that point because. Yeah. Although did you see that shares in Zoom plummeted with news of the vaccine, with a potential vaccine? Shares in Zoom went down by like 10%.
All I got was people going, hey, my pension's finally going up.
The stock market went up, Zoom went down. We had about an hour or so chatting here on Zoom about the character, about what the way he saw his approach to telling this story through the film, which is quite it's a unique way because it's he's sort of not pastiching, but he's shooting it in a style that is very dated, that is not now. You know, it's shot as a classic film from the 30s, 40s. So we talked about that. My webcam broke. I panicked. We kept going. And then he said some nice things, and I then lay on the floor with a headache going, oh, it's so hard being an actor. And thinking, I'm going to be very sad when I don't get this part. And then I got a message at 4 a.m. saying, you're going to be doing the part.
I tell you what, like you wouldn't be human, but I mean, you're sitting there, it must have been nerve-wracking to one, to audition like that, but two, just waiting.
Waiting is always, you teach yourself to wait in this job, but he's ruthlessly efficient. And that's actually makes you feel really good as an actor, because you feel like he's not going to sit there going, do I want him? Is he good enough? Is that guy? He was like, no, I, this is the guy I want. Like, I can get the performance I need out of him, so I'm going to go for it, which is a real, it's a shot in the arm. That's a boost. Of course, it's nerve-wracking. And it's also nerve-wracking if you've had, I think this applies in every field, if you've had a couple of months with not much work, and so every time you have a job interview or an audition or whatever, you put a bit more pressure on yourself to go, right, if I don't get this one, then it's even worse next time. And I don't. So you have to kind of cancel and continue every time and just keep a bit of faith in yourself that what you've got to offer is going to be the answer to someone's question. Even if you find yourself, not getting a job that you didn't want anyway, and you go, oh God, I didn't want that job, but I would have really wanted them to ask me to do it. Okay. You've got to keep going, right. Well, at some point I'll be a piece in a jigsaw that's being put together, and it'll be a good one, like this one is.
But this is Gary Oldman. You're playing Irving Thalberg. I mean, I'm fascinated about it. I've seen it's black and white. It's 30. Mm. It's Orson Welles. It's a brilliant story, isn't it? And it's got great.
It's a fantastic story.
I read a review. I wrote it down, and it was a good one.
That's good. Please don't read me any stinkers.
It was from Variety.
Yeah.
And it describes you as the youthful right hand smoothie. Exactly.
Yes. I'd be happy on my gravestone.
I'd be happy with that.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's just, it looks, is this sort of like, this is the big time, isn't it? Not that you're not in big time, but this is the.
No. I don't think in this industry you've ever made it, because I think that, everything shifts and you could never work again easily. But I think if you put a list, if you gave me a piece of paper 10 years ago when I was sort of starting my career out of drama school and said, what would you, in 10 years, if I say you will be on a set with David Fincher, making a film about 30s in Hollywood with Gary Oldman and a load of other amazing actors, do you accept? I would sign in a heartbeat, because it's absolutely wonderful, because you're working with these people who are at the top of their game. So you've got to make sure that you're at the top of yours. It's like you've been in the gym for years trying to stay fit. And then match day comes around, and you've got to make sure that you're alert and there, and it's just glorious.
Tell me about this. This fascinates me, because it doesn't matter. It's okay. It's acting. It's football. It's any walk of life. I mean, you're playing for the World 11 here, aren't you? Really? Yeah. You've been playing in the Beza Holmes Premier. No, you
haven't. Yeah. You get scouted in the Vanarama League. Yeah,
but it's Victoria and all this kind of stuff we'll talk about. But suddenly you're there. Now, surely wouldn't be human. Yeah, you've done your hard yards, you've done theatre, but there must be a shit. I've got to be good here. I have.
Yeah,
because I believe Fincher is in 100 takes and etc. Yeah. I mean, just tell us. It fascinates me.
There is definitely an element of shit. I've got to be good here, but I think, but what he demands a sort of work ethic, which I think means that. Again, that thing, like I said, that he's put his trust in you already. So you've got to go, okay, I'm good enough to be here by his judgment. So now I've got to make sure that I work to that level, because everyone else is. So it was more like, am I good? It was less, am I good enough? Or I've got to be good. It's more like, I've got to make sure that I am ready and that I've got stamina, because, famously, as you say, 80, 90, 100 takes on occasion. I think our record on this one was 70 something. You've also the standard is set by everyone around you. The crew were like military. They were absolutely incredible. And he promotes from within. There were people who were working as grips who he promoted to operating cameras during the shoot. There were the director of photography was the gaffer on his last film on Gone Girl. So, you know, he sort of throws down the gauntlet and goes, okay, here's a challenge. Do you want to rise to it? Really cool, because I think you can go one way, go one of two ways. Either you go, ah, it's a bit too much, like hard work. And as a result, I think in an environment like that, you just have a miserable time because everyone else is sprinting and you're plodding and going, I don't know about this. I want to do it 2-3 times. And if it's good enough, it's good enough. Or you do the other way where you go, okay, I'm going to relish how hard this is. And I'm going to try to come away from work every day just feeling a little bit better at my job.
Brilliant, yeah.
Which is, isn't that just the nicest feeling in the world, you know, to feel like if you can finish a long day at work and go, I think I'm a tiny bit better than I was at the start of the day. And that, I think if you are working your hardest with people like Gary and Tuppence and Charles Dance and Amanda Seyfried and Tom Burke and Arliss Howard and amazing actors like that, then it can only make you better. And it's such a glorious world to be recreating.
What about, when you've seen the film, since a simple question, are you happy with what you've done?
Yeah, I am. You know, it's I feel like watching something that you've made, as I'm sure you know, can be excruciating.
Yeah.
And so I think that if you can, you've got to change, I think you've got to sort of change your scale. I feel like if I can watch my own work and not actively want to die, then I've probably done quite a good job, because I'm already like adding, you've already got for free all your sort of self-judgment and self-criticism and like, oh, what a stupid face I've got and all that. You know, that's always going to be there. But if you can sit there and go, oh, I'm actually enjoying this film, or, oh, that scene was, yeah, I didn't want to hide behind my hands watching myself. Then it's a good sign. And I think it's a really good film. I've been shielding for my mum because she's had some surgery recently. So she was staying with us. And there was a big plan to take her to the premiere out in LA, and it was all in the contract and it was fab and it was so exciting. And she hasn't been to the States for like 20, 25 years. And she was, when I told her, she sort of cried and went, oh, I never thought I'd go to America. This is wonderful. And then of course the world happened and there is no premiere in LA. So I couldn't take her, but the magic of Netflix sent us the film to watch at home, the final cut, because David had sent the early cuts for us, some of us actors, to watch before. But this is, you know, the final version on Netflix. And we've got a projector because we're those kinds of assholes. And so we did our own little mini screening here for mum. And it was really wonderful. It's I think it's a really beautiful film, and it's a really challenging film in terms of, It would be easy to just make a sort of tribute to old Hollywood, which, you know, David Fincher could pee that film out without trying. You know, he could do that without breaking a sweat. But he does that bit, and then what's underneath it is what's fascinating. Is this this sort of exploration of America in Depression era, but the bits of America where there is still a lot of money.
Fake news, my friend.
Fake news, exactly. And they are, and they're flexing their muscles, flexing their might. No, anyway, they're finding their strength and their influence, and they're going, oh, actually, maybe in the movie making business, we could actually also influence politics, which, you know, is something that is dangerous and is something that, you know, those of us who consume a lot of media go, okay, that can be used for nefarious means. But this was the start of that era. And it was, as you say, fake news. It's a really early example of fake news as something that my character Irving was involved in. He made these essentially propaganda films. As you may well know, he hired out of work extras from MGM who were, you know, all basically homeless because there was no money and the economy was in the bin. And he paid them to pretend to be regular citizens and interviewed them, asking their opinion on this California gubernatorial election in 1934.
Fascinating, isn't it?
Isn't it amazing? And the art was that he managed to vaguely make it almost look like it was impartial, because he interviewed people from both sides. But of course, because they were clever, the people who were talking on the side that he favoured, the Republican candidate, were much more trustworthy, and the people who were the favouring the Democrat were sounded like mad communists, and you know, people who are going, I want to steal all the money for my homeless friends and steal your house, and he put them before all the MGM films and made it look like they were actual newsreel footage, and it's amazing because it influenced that election, and then people started going, oh, we could do this all over, and it's, you know, it's been happening in the past few months.
I was about to say, it's just the timing is unbelievable.
Yeah,
I've got a couple for you. On the back, because I guess with COVID and what have you, you know, Mank, may, I don't know, tell me if I'm wrong. It's, you know, usually you'd be doing all kinds of press tours and it'd be bam, bam, bam. Have you had a reaction? Have you had, has your agent's phone been ringing? no, seriously.
I think it's too early to say in that regard, but I think, there's a couple of things going on. Firstly, our industry is in trouble. You know, there is less work going around because, well, the theatres are all closed and the filming that is happening is taking a lot longer. So I have been able to do a little bit, but there is less stuff going around. But we'll see when the film comes out, and it's, you know,
it's there.
It is, and at the moment I'm just trying to. I know, God, in this world as it is, to know that you've created something that is that exists is amazing. Is wonderful.
Here's one for you. How about this for a segue? David Fincher, well, amongst other things, became famous for directing Vogue, Madonna.
Didn't he? Yeah.
And of course, one of the things I loved because. Because with these interviews, I end up like the biggest stalker in the world. I apologise, but you know you.
No, don't apologise. I love it.
Ale. I watched you in Poirot the other day.
Oh, Poirot.
Burton Cox, magnificent. But do you know what I liked? I liked Dancing Colour, The Crooks.
Oh, did you watch that? Isn't that lovely?
About it was because of all the stuff. Because there's some stuff I missed out. There's some stuff. It's very much on you.
It's a lovely video that, you know, and it was. It was directed and written by Dan, who's in the band.
Yeah.
And it's it's quite a long time ago I did it, but it's a lovely little silent film. And he now, Dan now works in script. He's a script writer and script developer. So he's, you know, he was having a go at it then, but he's really well and truly in that world now. It's a lovely video, isn't it?
How did that come about?
It came about through how did I meet them? I met them at a Richard Hawley gig, mm-hmm. With my, in fact, it was a very early date with my girlfriend. And they had mentioned, I think she was maybe going to do the video. Yeah, she was, but she couldn't. And we chatted and he was like, oh, actually, we talked about it and we went, oh, that sounds really cool. How about this? How about that? Then he went, well, how about you do it? So I went up to Sheffield to do that with them, and it was a real treat actually, because it's a very subtle little moment between two not quite strangers. Oh, thanks for watching that, Rob. That's lovely.
No, I tell you what it did though, because I mean I was just about to get into Joshua Bloom in Ripper Street when he got blown to pieces.
Got blown up way too early, man.
We're looking good in that, and then so I sort of if. When you get your CV, not that you need one now, but when you have your CV, Dancing Colour is because it's so
long.
It's because it's you so long. It is actually a very good CV type of thing.
It is actually, yeah. It's a lovely little thing to put on your showreel, isn't it?
Yeah,
absolutely. And it's not in black and white, but there's a discussion of it in it. And I love the look of black and white stuff. I shot a short film about an artist called Angus Fairhurst in black and white a while ago, and I just think it's really wonderful because it can focus the eye weirdly the ears. It can make the storytelling more focused, I think, if you're in black and white, because you know all the sort of background noise, literally, you know, that your brain's having to process is taken away, and we shot Mank. Usually when you make a black and white film, you shoot it in colour and then convert it afterwards, you know.
Right.
But David Fincher had these cameras built for him by Red, who are the sort of industry standard camera makers. They built these 8K, you know, incredibly high definition monochrome black and white cameras. So they only film in black and white. They only capture pure light. So everything that was he didn't actually change much in the edit. You know, he didn't make it a different look. What he photographed is what we see on screen, and so all that high contrast, you know, shafts of light, faces in profile a la Citizen Kane, was all done there and then in camera, and it's a real joy.
You know, I had a spell for my own where I was filming Sky stuff in black and white.
Really?
Yeah, I was filmed it. I pat myself on the back, you know, for what I was doing, football, and still.
Yeah, absolutely pat yourself on the back.
But it was. I was shot in black and white, and I got a call. He's dead now. The guy who was the boss of Sky, Vic Wakeling, and he said, "Tell that Rob McCaffrey he wasn't going to get sacked, but we are not having anything in black and white again."
Why were you shooting in black and white? What was it for?
I was interested. I don't know. I've always loved it. I love black and white. I love black and white photographs.
So do I.
We were just at a party, well, not recently, unfortunately, about God knows when, 6 months ago. I'd had a few drinks, and I was snapping. It was all the family with their kids, aunties, uncles, and I started snapping loads of photos, just, you know, which I love when people are in black and white. And honestly, I sent them off to everybody, and this is spectacular. I don't know, there's something.
Well, because it's pure light, isn't it?
I know.
I was speaking to the. I'm a massive nerd, and I love learning about how everything works. So I would always basically be annoying the crew and the camera operator and the DOP on set, just being like, "How does this work? What does that do? What does this?" And I was getting them to talk to me about the cameras, and they were saying it's what makes it special is that it's pure light. You know, all they're capturing is there a photon hitting the sensor or isn't there? You know, there's a simplicity to it, and I just think it's beautiful. I love it.
Victoria, which was it was a who's who of well, it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Oh, we've lost Diana Rigg now, but yeah.
What have you? But I mean,
and John Sessions,
That was an incredible, incredibly popular.
Mm.
Will you be back? You see, you've knackered yourself though, because I was reading Nell Hudson. Well, Nell Hudson said she cried when she on the way home when she realised she was going to be written out. She was going to die.
Yeah, yeah. Spoiler alert.
Sorry, is it out yet?
Yeah. Oh yeah. God. Yeah. Yeah. Very much so.
Well, I was going to say,
I'm winding you up.
But I was also smiling, thinking to myself, when, because she was invited, wasn't she? The writer invited, said, "Look, you're going to get written out." Did she? I just was smiling. I wasn't smiling, but I was thinking, did she phone you and go, "Well, that's it, we're knackered"?
Yeah. No, we did. We went for dinner together and went, right, if we're leaving, we're going to leave on a bang. And then we watched our last episode. We watched it round here when it was on together, me and Nell. Victoria was great. I mean, it was a really popular show with fab actors, and it was just lush to be in. And it's a kind of show that made a lot of people very happy at the weekend. Yeah. And it's a very different piece of work to, you know, something like a Mank, but they are equally valid, because I think we need escapism as much as we need you know, really challenging cerebral stuff. And I loved doing it. I mean, I did three years on it. And it's so rare that you get 3 years to live in one character or one job in this world. You know, who gets to do anything like job security? But it was great because, firstly, you know, you get the arc of a character over the course of a few years. And secondly, just as someone who is constantly trying to sort of work on their craft, to get 3 years doing the same guy is great, because after a while you don't have to worry about who you are. You can just worry about trying to hone, trying to do it better. You know, yeah. So it was really fab, and I had such a blast. We stayed up in York and Harrogate for 6 months a year for 3 years. It was great.
Okay, what happens now? I guess it's a difficult question to answer, isn't it? Because because the situation we're in. But
what happens now is I try to enjoy the ride. That's what I'm trying to say to myself. Just, you know, enjoy. It's not often that films like this come out that you're in. Never. And to just enjoy it and stay sane and safe at home.
Are you
a worrier?
Yeah.
It depends on the category of worry. I'm an extreme worrier about some things, and some things I'm quite let it be. Yeah. And I think I've probably done enough worrying about work to know that I'm in a fortunate place, and as and when the world does start coming back, I have cool stuff under my belt, so that's only going to stand me in good stead. I know that work can come in waves and go in waves, and I know that you can be at a really low ebb for a while in terms of your career or in your mind, and then things can change like that. So I worry about other things. I worry about people and the future in other ways. But in terms of my profession, I've kind of got tired of worrying, and I'm just trying to go right, let's see what happens, because there's a lot of us out there desperately wanting to be able to tell stories and share art with people who I think have a real need and thirst for it at the moment. You know, people, as we come out of this and as we go through it, really need art in whatever form, you know, to either to distract them from fear in the world or to help them to like process the big stuff that's going on that everyone's going through. So there's a lot of us who are really desperate to share stuff with the world, and I think our voice is valid and will be kind of vindicated in the coming months.
I obviously know that when you're talking about the really big stuff, it's home to Brighton next, away to Aston Villa.
Yeah, they're the big stuff.
Game in hand, 3 points, could go top of the league. I mean,
top of the league.
Get that right.
That's the big stuff, yeah. That's the thing you set aside 2 weeks to think about. I think who's going to be tired coming back?
That would be a worry.
That's a real worry. I mean, our away form is great, but we do shit goals at home. Yeah, that kind of. they're the big.
Ollie Watkins says, "Hey, listen, you know what? Really lovely talking to you.
Absolutely lovely to chat with you, Rob. Thank you.
We'll be watching with interest what happens next. Can't wait for Mank. I've got to say, we'll all be sitting around the family, all talking about it. We'll be glued to Netflix.
Yeah, it's a lovely thing to have in the darkness of December. I think it's going to be a really enjoyable watch. I think you'll enjoy it.
Go Villa. Lovely talking
to you. Thank you, mate. Take care, pal. Real pleasure. All the best. Bye-bye.